following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
AM 600 The Answer presents the Captain Vic Tyson's Still Just Fishing Show, brought to you by Frontline Insurance. If you want to know where those fish are, what those fish are biting, and how to get them in the boat, then you've come to the right place. Captain Vic would love to hear from you, so give him a ring at 222-8255. That's 222-8255. And now, here's the host of the Still Just Fishing Show, Captain Vic Tyson.
And we're back this morning. Give us a call, 222-8255. I tell you, talking about trout fishing, I know you've been catching, you know, off and on, you know, not a lot of them, but you've been catching some nice trout on the DOA shrimp.
Yep.
And that's a great bait. Also the gulp. I like the molting color 3-inch gulp shrimp. I like those also.
I like the swimming mullet chartreuse. And yeah. I've had pretty good luck with that,
that's
too.
The gulp. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it, as far as like my favorite lure, of course, is the Bonner Long A.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest mangrove snapper I ever caught was with a Bonner Long A, throwing for trout up against a rock bank, and they were on that rock bank.
Wow.
And
they're
aggressive. He nailed it, and then I'm like, he's not fighting like a trout. Pull him in, and of course, he grabbed that last treble hook, you know.
Right.
You know, that bomber's got three treble hooks, but so he grabbed that last treble hook and had him hooked up good. And that's why I like catching flounder on the bombers, too, because usually you don't – when they grab a bomber, especially the back end of it like that, I mean, they're hooked. It's not like, you know, grabbing a mud minnow and having to wait, you know, let him crush it and turn it around, take him in his mouth. That's why I also like to fish with live shrimp for a flounder sometimes, you know, because, I mean, if you're keeping the shrimp on the move, you don't have as much problem with little fish, you know, nibbling it all up and stuff, but – when you throw a live shrimp out and you let him sit, that's when you're going to have problems, usually, or stingrays or catfish or stuff like that.
I've caught flounder on the bomber. My only argument with that is it's like casting a potato chip. If the wind's not behind you,
they're tough. It's hard to cast them. It really is. Yeah. And then if you go with a little heavier one, which they call the pro bomber, you know, the pro series or whatever, it's got, instead of having those two little BBs in the throat of it, it's got like six.
I don't know that I'm qualified for a pro lure yet. I mean, I'm not so sure that I have that skill.
And you can get them the same colors, but what they do is a regular bomber will, you know, dive 2 to 3 feet.
Right.
And the pro bomber will dive 4 to 6 feet.
Big difference.
So you got to watch where you're using it at, you know.
Right.
Because you don't want to, you know, drag it across some rocks or oyster beds, because those three treble hooks will grab, you know, whatever the bottom is, and that's, you know.
Well, I know in your situation that makes a huge difference because you're with people that don't understand how that works. I haven't lost a lure in, three or four trips. I mean, I do lose them for sure, and I do go after them, but I'm not hanging up every minute like some of your folks would.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and it depends. I mean, I have some real good fishermen, too, that know the difference, too, between the bottom and, you know, they don't set the hook in a rock or something.
The bottom and the top.
Yeah. But, you know, I had three people one time came, and they were from up north, and I can't remember where they were from. But anyway, when they booked the trip, they were heading toward, they were going to Orlando for, you know, to go down there to Disney World and all that stuff. And then they had booked a fishing trip with me on their way back. They were going to come up here and, you know, fish, and that way they could take some fish back home with them. And they talked about how they, you know, had seen my website, which my website is not up anymore, but they had seen my website, saw the pictures, and they say, oh, yeah, we fish all the time. We love it. I'm like, okay. So I get them out there and pulled up this first place, and, you know, I'm getting the spinners out, you know, and showing them how to, now threw the bomber out and showing them how to work it, you know, and showed them how it floats and dies when you pull it. And then the guy says, we never use reels like that. And I said, oh, you use bait casters. He goes, no, we only use cane poles. It's all we've ever used.
Yikes.
So usually I can take people and show them, you know, how to cast, you know, and cast with them a few times, you know, and usually I 15 minutes or so, I got them casted pretty good.
Right.
All day. I would go to the front of the boat and cast, go to the middle of the boat, cast, go to the back of the boat. There's three of them. Go to the back of the boat and cast. Then go back up to the front and cast, go to the middle of the boat and cast.
Oh,
let
my
me tell
goodness.
You, I was tired puppy that afternoon.
I bet you. You know? Very frustrating.
And then, well, of course, when we went up to catch redfish at the lower tide, I was casting for them. But, you know, you cast it out there and let it sit, you know. So,
right.
that was a lot different. But yeah, I was pretty wore out about that. I was like, you know, all they've used is cane poles, and I don't know. Usually I can get people to cast pretty good, you know, if they've never cast before, and or if they've been using bait casters compared to spinners or
right.
whatever. But, you know, that was a little difficult that day. But
Sounds horrifying. Jeez.
But anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, I see that Carlucci's open. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to take some of the pressure probably, especially with the new docks, you know, that they've got out there, the long docks. That's going to take some of the pressure off of Jim King, hopefully. And, of course, now that the Kingfish tournament's over with, you know, we got Jim King back open, and it's been open, I mean, you know, back after the Kingfish tournament. So, you know, the north side anglers, you know, I say north side, everybody who launches on those ramps, should things get back to normal now, you know.
Yeah, it's much better. Of course, I'm not affected that much because I rarely fish on the weekends.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been at the launch ramp. When it gets cold, I'm the only person there.
Mm.
And that's nice.
Mm.
Unless I'm just freezing and not catching anything.
Yeah. That's happened before.
Yeah, if I just stay with fishing and not catching. And speaking of which, yesterday I got two flounders. I got a big mangrove, nice mangrove snapper in that trout. So I'm at the fish station, which is a wonderful thing. Even though I'd launched at Carlucci, I drove over to clean those fish. And this guy, it's either Chad or Clark, I can't remember, he's a kayaker. He showed up. He said, you know, can I squeeze in here and clean this redfish? And I said, yeah. He says, I wasn't even going to keep it. I said, well, you just lay right there. I'll take care of it for you. You know, I even tried to, Mister, I got to feed my family face, and that didn't work.
Yeah, he had to feed his team.
Yeah, but he was obviously somebody that had fished for a long time because, I mean, he ripped through that fish when it came mm-hmm. to cleaning it. And he was had his kayak, and he was fishing in Simpson's Creek, which Lord knows there's plenty of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, yeah, I caught this fish, and a shark got it. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking, man, it didn't get it much. But you could see where, you know, something mm-hmm. pounced on it, and it was a I don't know, 24, I'd say, inch redfish, so a decent fish. And I said, really? He goes, yeah, Simpson's Creek is the most shark-infested waterway we have.
Mm.
I didn't know that. He caught three reds. One of them got bit in half. One of them got taken. And this one, he said, it was only about a 3-foot black tip. He got the fish away from the shark, and since he didn't think it was going to live, he was going to clean it. I had no idea Simpson's Creek was the most shark-infested waterway we had.
I think Nassau River and the jetties is myself. Now, he may kayak, he probably doesn't fish out in the main part of Nassau River.
Right.
You know, and certainly probably doesn't fish the jetties. To me, the jetties is the most shark-infested place.
I mean, I figured it was a gross exaggeration, but...
Yeah, but there are some sharks in Simpsons. I've hooked into, you know, fishing in there. I've hooked in some big sharks, take you for a ride. I mean, you know, they'll actually... you know, pull your boat, or that you have to take your trolling motor and chase them down, you know.
Right.
And, you know, there's some pretty good sharks because it empties out, you know, in the Nassau Sound right there, you know, plus Fort George Inlet. Now, there again, you have all these people that go to the sandbar at Fort George Inlet. They just don't realize how many sharks is in there, you know.
Right.
They're all swimming and all this stuff. It's pretty neat, but, you know, it's a nice place to go. We call it the Redneck Riviera.
Yeah.
And, you know, on the weekends, everybody goes to sandbars and, you know, they raft up and they party and they swim and they got kids out there swimming.
Sure.
And I'm shocked no more people get bit out there. They used to do that at Nassau, but they've stopped letting them get on Bird Island, you know, the two Bird Islands out there, Bird Island 1 and Bird Island 2.
I saw the signs.
Yeah. And so they used to do that out there, but that is a real shark infested area right there too in the summertime.
Makes sense.
And the thing about it is I watched these things on TV where they were talking about, you know, the sharks in Australia the other night. And what's so funny about it is, I'll tell you about that when we come back.
Okay.
All right. We'll be back after this.
Durance Tree Service, servicing Northeast Florida for over two decades. They do the whole nine yards, from light tree trimming to the largest tree removal. Homeowners beware, don't let uninsured contractors on your property. Durance Tree Service is family owned and operated, fully licensed and insured, with workman's comp on all their employees. For the absolute best tree service in Northeast Florida, call Durance Tree Service at 449-2848. That's 449-2848.
Palm Valley Fish Camp, located at 299 Roscoe Boulevard North, or North Beach Fish Camp, located at 103rd Street in Neptune Beach, or Julington Beach Fish Camp, located in Mandarin, has you covered for your day of fishing. Owner Ben Groeschel has set the hook perfectly. Lunch opens Wednesday through Sunday with dinner 7 days a week. Try the main dishes, shrimp and grits and blackened mahi. Always check out the fresh fish at the fish camps. All fish camps are a proud sponsor of the Flounder Pounder.
Lil Hooker Clothing and Accessories, performance apparel for all ages, on and off the water. Lil Hookers offers quality and comfortable apparel for men, women, and children. Make the most of every cast. Don't wear clothing that's in the past. Get your gear today. Contact Brian Dutcher at 904-408-1526. Here's that number again right there. It's 904-408-1526. And remember this, y'all. Lil Hooker don't play. We stay catching fish all day.
You can always trust Captain Vic to put you right where the fish are biting. Just like you can always trust Frontline Insurance to insure your home with the best coverage possible. At Frontline, we'll help you create an action plan with our trusted vendors and contractors to make repairs to your home. The best part? We'll help pay the cost of those eligible home repairs. Now that's smarter insurance. Find your local Frontline agent at frontlineinsurance.com. Frontline Insurance, building home partnerships with coastal Floridians since 1998.
Let's get back to the Captain Vic Tyson's Still Just Fishing Show on AM 600 WBOB. Today's show is brought to you by Frontline Insurance. Visit frontlineinsurance.com and get a homeowner's quote today. The Still Just Fishing Show is a live call-in show, so give us a ring at 904-222-8255. That's 904-222-8255. And now, here's your host, the Wizard of the Waterways, Captain Vic Tyson.
And then when the sharks are like that, I'm like, you know, okay, don't wash your hands off in the water.
Yeah, right.
Use a rag. But yeah, I mean, as far as the sharks go, when you're talking about, you know, Nassau Sound, I mean, Simpsons Creek, there is sharks in there, you know. And the Kayak Amelia does all the kayaking tours up and down there, you know.
Oh, I don't go there because of the kayaks usually. Yeah. So many of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, I think there's more sharks at the jetties and up and down the beach right now. And the sharks have been so protected. It's like I was talking about watching this thing on TV about the great whites in Australia. And, you know, it was for years and years and years, they didn't have a problem. And they said the great white numbers had dropped dramatically, you know. And then the last couple of years, they started having, and especially in 2015, they started having people not just getting bit, but people being killed by the sharks, you know, by the great whites. And then they were doing flyovers with planes and stuff, and they figured there was about 8,000 sharks around that particular
their big reef.
Stretch of coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget, it's some bay. I forget what the name of the bay was. But they said that there was, the numbers have just dramatically increased. But they couldn't figure out why people were getting shark bit. And I'm like, wait a minute. You just said it. You know? I mean.
Right.
The numbers have dramatically increased. So, but see, they've protected these sharks so much. You know, people used to be able to catch them and eat them and stuff like that. Now they have to be pretty good size, like a bull shark or whatever. I mean, black tips and all, they got to be, I think it's 54 inches to the fork.
Which ones are good to eat?
And black tips are really good to eat. And but actually, bonnetheads are good to eat.
I know.
Bonnetheads are, they only eat shrimp and crabs. So they're really good, clean fish to eat. You know, they want to eat a cut pogie or whatever, you know. You know, whenever you start getting sharks that big, and then trying to put them in the boat with you, you know, that gets a little hairy. And it's like, if we catch a bull shark, I don't care if he's 3 foot long, I don't put him in the boat. You know, I try to cut the leader as close as I can to the shark, you know, and let him go. Because let me tell you, and I use bronze hooks. I don't use stainless steel hooks, so they'll rust out, you know. But, I mean, I have caught sharks before with stainless steel hooks in their mouth, where people have cut the hooks off, and stainless steel hook, they've got it. It's forever. You know what I mean? They can't get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like to use bronze hooks, and they'll rust out. Same thing if I catch a redfish, you know, using a bronze hook, it'll rust out of him too if I have to cut it, you know, if he gets it too deep or whatever. But, you know, with the bull sharks, they'll bite anything. I mean, I put a small one in the boat one day, and he's like, you know how you put your rod down in the boat and you're trying to unhook the fish?
Right.
I mean, he starts biting the butt of the rod and
chewing it up.
Oh, yeah. He'll bite coolers, your feet, whatever he can get to, you know, and they go bananas when they get in the boat. And so I don't put a bull shark in the boat, no matter what size. They're the mean ones. They got some pretty gnarly teeth. They will hurt you.
Mm.
You know, they will hurt you pretty bad.
Well, I was pretty surprised. He seemed to think that these sharks are getting learning to go after fishermen's raid in Simpson's Creek in that area.
Well, same thing as they'll go behind a shrimp boat. They know,
well, that makes sense.
They know that shrimp boat sooner or later is going to start cleaning out that net and throwing out bycatch.
Yeah, I was out on a shrimp boat once for 3 days, and we had, it was Sharkapalooza behind that boat.
Yeah.
We'd pull that net up.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, it's like you don't want to fall over out there.
Oh, no. There's,
and then there's tarpon. They've learned, same thing.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But fish have learned. I mean, you take a redfish in the creek. You catch a redfish in the creek and in the shallow water, and he goes around and all that. If he gets close to that trolling motor, he's going to head straight for it. Same thing with your anchor rope. He'll wrap around that anchor rope quicker than you can blink your eyes. I mean, it's just like something that they know how to cut that line off. These fish, I don't know if they're getting smarter, and people think I'm crazy, but I'm seeing it all the time.
I was thinking that.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm seeing it all the time. I mean, you know, it is a learned behavior, sort of like when you were talking about they were throwing all that dead fish out there. They're dead bait out there, and the fish was hitting it.
I know.
They're sitting there waiting.
Yesterday when I got that flounder on my light rod, I turned my troll motor off because I didn't want to.
Oh, yeah.
And I always put, not always, but I usually put up my motor so I don't lose them on the back of the boat. But it was pretty amazing. And I never thought of Simpson's Creek as, you know, shark infested.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right there at Nassau Bend. One end of it dumps out at Fort George. The other end of it dumps out at Nassau River.
Mm-hmm.
Nassau River has a lot of sharks in it. A lot of sharks, especially in July and August. I mean, that warm weather, there's, you know, we'd be out there fishing sometimes out there for whiting. And then, you know, a porpoise comes and rolls.
Yeah.
You know, and a shark comes up and stays. And we've seen some pretty big sharks out there just kind of cruising around the sandbars out there.
I do have about 12 pounds of beef scraps that I need to do something with. It's frozen.
There you go. Go out there and catch some sharks with them. You better have some good tackle. Don't use your 10-pound Power Pro.
No, I got some bigger
10-pound spider wire or whatever.
Yeah. Hey, you know, we were talking about this fish light.
Yeah.
And talk about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a new product thing, and it just, I don't know if these guys were heavy drinkers or how they came up with this idea, but it's pretty fun. It's called a Bojo, B-O-J-O, fish light, and it's for your dock or your pond or whatever. But it's a typical fish light, you know, that hangs over the water. And these maniacs have attached a weed eater to it. Now, it's an electric weed eater. My guess is it doesn't have the RPMs necessary to mow your lawn.
Yeah.
But the thing, when it turns on, it's photosensitive, so it turns on at dusk. The weed eaters blow the bulb, and it spins around. And any bugs that come within that area get killed or wounded and drop in the water. So the reviews from people that own these things are about $260, as near as I can tell. The Bojo fish light are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Because not only does it feed the fish, you know, 1,000 times better than a regular light that we all know draws fish in.
Right.
But even in the daytime, those fish are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the...
Yeah, they're waiting.
The all-night cafeteria, open all night.
Yeah.
You know, no waiting.
These fish learn. They learn. It's like they know to go around the docks at night.
Right.
You know, it's not like people say, well, the docks lit up. But if that fish is across the river or a quarter of a mile away, he's not going to see that light.
Correct.
He's just going to go there knowing that those small bait fish are going to be there.
Well, can you imagine how many bugs it knocks down?
It's got to be.
In an evening, it's thousands and thousands.
Got to be. Yeah, because when I had a fish pond, we had to fill it in to build my dad's house in front of my property there. But when I had a fish pond out there, we had some big old catfish out there. I mean, I had 15, 16-pound catfish in my pond.
Nice.
And that was pretty neat to go out in front yard and play with those, you know, catch them on rod and reel. But the fish out there, when I had that light on, I had a street light hanging over. When I have that light on like that, you can see the fish kind of swimming around right there, you know, by that light. Because they knew that light, that's the little minnows and stuff was going to go to the light. And also just the bugs out there flying around. They'd wind up in the water just naturally, you know, flying around.
Well, just imagine if 70 or 80% of them landed in the water.
I wish I'd have had that. That would have fed the fish really good, see.
Oh, yeah. You know?
Now I don't have the fish pond because I had to fill it in. But
there's guys. One guy had a 10-acre pond. He had four of them. He said it was just fantastic. Sometimes they go sit on the dock just to watch, and I've done that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing looks great. You know, Boho is B-O-J-O, fish light. And so, yeah, that is pretty neat.
It's cool.
So, but, yeah, you could.
But how do you do that? How do you say, let's put this weed eater on the bug light, on the light, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty crafty.
Quite a few alcoholic beverages involved in that.
I think so.
It's like, let's see, how can we make that light even better?
Yeah.
But that's really a great idea. And like I said, all it's got to do is just, you know, tap the bug. It doesn't have to be like a weed eater.
No.
You know, that strong.
Nick is wing, he's done.
Yeah, exactly. And what they're going to do is they're going to fall straight down in the water, and that's it. And you got the light right there where the fish can see them when they hit the water. So, great idea.
Yeah.
And the light is, you know, I'm looking at it, so the light is big enough. It's like a regular floodlight or street light, as we used to have them, you know. A regular light like that I know is at a bunch of docks all around town.
Well, and I hope anybody that's listening right now that owns a dock buys some of those things for us.
Yeah.
Because we'll be over.
To fish your dock.
Yeah.
They'll have to turn the breaker off when they don't fish it, you know.
Yeah.
But, I know a couple of guys that would probably really benefit from that, you know. I know one of them catches trout off his dock quite a bit, but I've gone over and fished for it and then not catch a trout, you know.
When I fished
in the daytime, but he can catch them at night. See, there again, those trout know to go there at night.
Sure. Well, when I stayed at Devil's Elbow, which is a fantastic place to stay if you have a boat and you fish down in St. Augustine, they have a pretty good light on their dock, and it was infested with trout, and they wouldn't hit anything.
Mm. Why, they're stuffed?
No, they're smart. I mean, they wouldn't hit a shrimp on a bare hook. I tried. And when I was working in St. Petersburg, same thing. We went to a public dock, trout everywhere. You could see them. You know, they'd go through the light, and they were hanging out. They wouldn't hit anything because they learned that people fish them so hard because, you know, it's public access pretty much. So there's always five guys trying to catch them.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I'm fixing to start night fishing.
Well, that's going to be a lot cooler. Of course, we didn't have bad temperatures this week.
No, it was pretty nice.
In the mid to high 80s, and I know it'll probably change now that I'm fixing to go back to work, you know.
You know, I've noticed the fish are much more relaxed without you on the water, so that's a good thing for the rest of us.
Yeah, you said you had a great day yesterday.
Yeah, I did.
No, I'll get back out there, hopefully, and get a few fish, so, you know, get it going. I got to get back out there and find out what's happening. So, anyway, I got a trip tomorrow. We'll see what that works out. It's a guy with a couple of kids and a couple of teenage kids. So, you know, I got to call them today and see what they want to go after. You know.
You going to use your sailboat or you? It's going to be a good day for it.
Yeah, 15 knots out of the northeast. It's not.
That's a bunch of kids.
Not looking forward to that at all. But, you know, of course, it has to happen. It's like now that we're back, it has to happen.
Talk Radio, AM 600. 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the Trump administration can use Pentagon funds to replace sections of a border wall with Mexico. The court voted 5-4 to lift a freeze on the money that had been put in place by a lower court. The ruling was opposed by the court's four liberal justices. It means work now can begin on four contracts awarded by the administration, approximately $4.5 billion in Department of Defense funding may now be accessed. Hong Kong police fired tear gas at protesters who defied police warnings not to march in a neighborhood where 6 days earlier a mob apparently targeting demonstrators brutally attacked people in a train station. Officers in riot gear shot the tear gas today into a crowd of demonstrators who were standing their ground despite appeals from police to end the unsanctioned procession. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow proceeded upward by 51 points. This is SRN News.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor. And in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're Medishare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people. And if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different. And as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to
get
lose.
Get a two-pack of MyPillow's premiums for $69.98. That's only $34.99 per pillow, which is the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. This offer is only available at MyPillow.com or call 800-950-9024. Use promo code WBOB.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Tune in every Wednesday afternoon at 5 for Rapid Fire Real Estate with Anita Hiles.
We're looking at lots more homes coming up, lots more restaurants.
Anita has all the latest news on Northeast Florida hot properties and everything you need to know relating to your most important investment.
The whole idea is to sell your house. We know what the market is.
It's Rapid Fire Real Estate with Anita Hiles every Wednesday afternoon at 5 on AM 600 and 101.1 FM Talk Radio WBO.
How will the weather affect you? WBOB Weather.
For your Saturday, partly sunny and breezy. Showers and thunderstorms this afternoon with a high 85. Tonight, partly cloudy, a chance of scattered storms, low 71. Sunday, mostly sunny, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high 87. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, again a chance of showers and thunderstorms, low 71. And Monday, we'll start the work week partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high 90.
Let's get back to the Captain Vic Tyson's Still Just Fishing Show on AM 600 WBOB. Today's show is brought to you by Frontline Insurance. Visit frontlineinsurance.com and get a homeowner's quote today. The Still Just Fishing Show is a live call-in show, so give us a ring at 904-222-8255. That's 904-222-8255. And now, here's your host, the Wizard of the Waterways, Captain Vic Tyson.
Yeah, we had, and we're back this morning, and we had a lot of areas that have silted in. There's the one place where I like to go through all the way through from, like, Clapboard to Fort George Inlet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can go through from Clapboard to Sisters Creek right there by the Manatee Zone, But from going from Clapboard to Fort George Inlet, there's that other way to get through there. But there's one spot in there that I used to just fly through there. You know, I'd have to jack my motor up a little bit on the jack plate to go through there, but still go through there on plane.
Right.
Now, if it's close to low tide, I can't go through there at all. And I can't even slow down, jack the motor up, and barely go across it. You just can't get through there. And that has silted in a lot since the hurricane. And so there's other places like you're talking about, maybe right there in Nassau River that, you know.
We're talking about right at the bridge, the old fishing bridge going to Nassau.
Those sand banks, I mean, have really just kind of, I don't know how you'd say this, the sand banks though have really moved around, and out there the sandbars move around Nassau River when you have storms, that big of storms. Now, it used to be a fish camp right there.
Makes sense.
You know, where the land comes from Salt Pit Creek and Nassau River.
Yeah.
That land, it used to extend way out past the bridge. And there used to be a little place there where you come off the road, Hexer Drive, and that was a fish camp right there. And they sell bait and all that when I was a kid. And that whole place is just completely gone, washed out. You know, the whole bank, they had to tear the building down, everything, because it kept washing, washing. And now it's already washed way past the bridge. You know, it's up in there.
Well, I think it's at least 4 feet of silt in there. And, you know, it used to be you could go there before they put the fence up. And I'd take my boat up there, and I'd go, and I'd see those guys up there fishing. And if they were slinging trout over the railing, I'd anchor a couple hundred yards away from them and just catch trout. It was easy peasy. Incoming tide, boom. It always happened.
Yeah.
And I haven't had a good day there in year and a half.
Yeah.
And so I quit fishing it. Plus, I'm lazy, so I could go see those guys catching fish and go, oh, I'm going to go here, like every other fisherman. But I slip-corked it Monday, and it was much more shallow than it used to be. And maybe that's why the trout aren't running through there like they used to.
Maybe.
You know, could have been the day, could have been the silt. I'm not sure.
But yeah.
I was fishing, not catching.
So when you have these storms like that, that happens quite a bit.
Yeah. It's too bad. It was a great spot. Change,
you know? And, yeah, there's going to be a lot of things change in the St. John's River because of this dredging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the areas where I used to love to drum fish when it was too rough to fish in the wintertime, when it was too rough to fish the jetties, like in November when you have these nor'easters blowing.
Right.
I would drum fish up the river, and it was a nice rock bank in there. When they started dredging, you know, last year and all, I fish that area, can't even get a bite there of no kind. And I used to catch drum and sheephead there. And I think probably now you can look on your depth finder and you can still see the drop off, the rocks, you know, stuff like that. I shouldn't say the rocks, you can see the hard bottom. But I think if that mud that they've dredged and stirred around has covered up oysters and barnacles, it's going to kill those oysters and barnacles.
Unless they can move up to the new rock and grow, start over.
Yeah, and so, you know, I guess that's what's happened in there, and there's just nothing in there now.
Makes sense.
And I'm afraid that's going to happen up and down the river quite a bit during this dredging.
Yeah. I don't fish in the river too much. Probably I should fish it more.
Well, right now it's probably kind of bad to fish it because, you know, sometimes you'll be sitting there and fishing in a place, and all of a sudden it looks like, you know, somebody spilled, you know, a half a million cups of coffee in there or something. You get that mud just comes through, looks like coffee with creamer in it.
Yeah.
Comes by your boat, and then you're like, well, might as well leave here, you know.
Well, I told you I fished in Arlington at Ready Point, and it was like chocolate milk, and I went across to Goat Island, and it was almost crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what? 300 yards across there.
It's like white shell rocks. I mean, you should be catching trout there now, white shell rocks, and this time of the year.
Hmm.
And, you know, last time I was over there, it's just muddy, muddy water. And if you're fishing for trout, it's muddy water, you might as well not even stop.
Yeah. I can't see my trolling motor bottom,
yeah,
I don't stay there. And, you know, I've gotten... And I think this is why sometimes the kayak guys catch more fish than me,
Because they concentrate more in an area.
Yeah, I can say the heck with this, and I'm going 5 miles away.
Yeah.
It doesn't take me any time at all.
Yeah.
And they can't.
Right.
They have a hard time going 500 yards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only do they get a paddle, and it's already 900 degrees outside, but
yeah,
they focus better.
I think so, too, because, like you said, they just can't move around as much.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, they're really working an area more than what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, usually a lot of times, like especially if you're redfish fishing, you go to an area, you fish that spot. If that spot don't produce, you don't move over 50 feet.
No.
You know, usually you pick up and you go another mile and a half over here or half a mile over there. Whereas that kayaker's going to move that 50 feet, 75 feet, something like that. And then he's going to be able to work that area too. And we fail to do that. We really do, you know.
I don't stay 20 minutes.
You know,
if I'm trout fishing, if I haven't got a hit in 15 or 20 minutes, I'm moving on.
And see, the thing about the trout also, if you're fishing a particular bank for trout, you know, they won't sit in one spot.
Mm-mm.
They're going to work up and down that bank. And a lot of times you could sit there, if we're throwing lures or whatever, you could throw lures 15, 20 times and all of a sudden start catching three or four trout. Then they disappear.
Right.
And then you keep throwing. And then next thing you know, you start catching them again. And so if you find an area where the trout are at, a lot of times they're just working that bank. They might go up the bank 300 feet away from where you're at because they've already eat all the bait right there.
So or the bait's moving.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, the bait ain't going to sit in one spot if the trout's sitting there eating them. You know?
Right.
So they, you know, the trout's going to work down that bank. And if you keep throwing, it's a lot of work to do it. But if you keep throwing, sooner or later, this trout's going to come back through there. More than likely. I mean, sometimes they disappear completely, depending on your tide also. But, you know, there's places once that water gets lower that I'm done with that area, you know.
Well, and now that you're making me really depressed, you know, I have the trolling motor with a tracking system. I can put a two-mile track, and I have a lot of tracks because I fish by myself. I go there, I push start, and it drives itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's quite possible that I'm 100 yards behind the trout, and they're going the same direction as me, and I'll never get
them. That's true. Now you need to just stop.
Thanks for that.
Stop and let them catch up with
you.
Or maybe you're just right behind them.
Right in front of them, right behind, doesn't matter.
Yeah. But, yeah, seriously, usually whenever I find an area where there's trout in there, I'll kind of give it a lot more time to see if that school of trout will come back by.
Oh, if I get a hit, even one. Like, I caught that trout yesterday, and I missed two more. And then I moved down to another location 50 feet away. It's a trouty area that I go to, and got nothing. And then by then I was tired. I went home.
Yeah.
So it was good, but yeah.
And so you have the pleasure of being able to do that.
I do, truly.
Yeah.
As long as I get a sandwich.
It's a whole lot different. You know, for people who are out fishing for themselves or enjoy fishing or whatever, it is a lot different than chartering when you're chartering, you are under pressure because, I mean, you can't make the fish bite, you know, so you've got to find something that's going to bite. And I mean, some days you can pull up to an area and catch fish. Other days you pull up to 20 areas to get a couple of fish. I mean, seriously, it gets tough sometimes, and especially in the summertime, more than the wintertime. And the reason it's tougher in the summer than it is the winter is the sheep's head is so spread out. You know, I mean, there'll be sheep's head way on down past the Buckman Ridge, you know, all up in the creeks, all that stuff. In the wintertime, they're concentrating more on rock banks and the jetties.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got it more concentrated, sort of like we was talking about the flounder being spread all around. So in the wintertime, you know, you have a lot more species you can fish. Also, the trout are more active. They're feeding more, you know, and they're more active. But then you have your trout. I mean, you have your sheep's head, your black drum, mangrove snapper, stuff like that, usually in the wintertime. So you've got a lot more species to target, you know. So that's to me a lot easier in the wintertime than it is in the heat of the summer. We'll be right back.
That's right, Jacksonville. You can go to a lot of places in North Florida to buy a gun. But at Wild West Guns, you're guaranteed the best price every day of the year. How? Wild West Guns buys dealer direct and passes the savings on to you. There's no middleman. You get the factory direct price every time. Plus, at Wild West Guns, you can choose from the very best selection in all of Jacksonville. Whatever you need, Wild West Guns has it. From handguns to hunting rifles, from shotguns to AK-47s, from Glock to SIG, Remington to Vanelli, Bushmaster to Stag, Wild West Guns has got you covered big time. The right gun, the right ammo, the right price, guaranteed. Wild West Guns, Lane Avenue South, Northeast Florida's premier firearms dealer. You get the factory direct price every time. Wild West Guns, you're guaranteed the best price every day of the year.
When you have insurance needs, be sure to visit Angler and Dimitri Insurance Services agent Craig Van Brocklin for a personalized quote on auto, home, boat, life, and commercial insurance. Save time and money with protection you can count on. Give Craig a call at 904-899-1106. That's 904-899-1106 for Dimitri Insurance Services.
Cross Creek Steakhouse and Ribs on Lane Avenue between I-10 and Normandy Boulevard on the west side. The home of great baby back ribs, steaks aged and cut by their in-house butcher, and the best shrimp in town. Come in and try one of their great combination platters. Make sure you try their southern side dishes. Are you having an event? Cross Creek Catering can make it special. They cater events from 5 to 5,000, every kind of food. Call 783-9579. That's 783-9579. Visit their website and look at their catering and takeout menus. Cross Creek, the taste of old Florida.
Lil Hooker Clothing and Accessories, performance apparel for all ages, on and off the water. Lil Hookers offers quality and comfortable apparel for men, women, and children. Make the most of every cast. Don't wear clothing that's in the past. Get your gear today. Contact Brian Dutcher at 904-408-1526. Here's that number again right there. It's 904-408-1526. And remember this, y'all. Lil Hooker don't play. We stay catching fish all day.
Trolling Motor Services Plus is now open for business. They're an authorized dealer and warranty service center for Minn Kota, Motor Guide, and Rodan Trolling Motors. They're also your home for power pole anchors and Cannon downrigger service and repair. Trolling Motor Services Plus sells, repairs, and installs pretty much anything electrical for your boat, including keep alive oxygen systems. Call Matt today at Trolling Motor Services, 573-0480. That's 573-0480. Check them out online at trollingmotorservicesplus.com.
Safe Harbor Seafood, Mayport Shrimp, Seared Tuna, and Spinach. Have your fresh filet, fresh fish, black and grilled or fried, or try their traditional seafood fry platters. Always remember Safe Harbor Seafood, located at 4378 Ocean Street in Mayport, Florida. Restaurant hours are Tuesday and Thursday, 10:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., Fridays and Saturdays, 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Safe Harbor is a proud sponsor of the Flounder Pounder.
If you go along Hexer Drive to fish, you'll find there's a great place for bait and tackle to stop at, and that's Browns Creek Fish Camp, located at 5212 Hexer Drive. They have everything you need for a complete day on the water. Browns Creek Fish Camp is one of the few locations where you can pull your boat in and restock your bait supply if you run out while you're fishing. A big supporter of the Recreational Fish Alliance, give them a call today at 904-757-1600. That's 904-757-1600.
Let's get back to the Captain Vic Tyson's Still Just Fishing Show on AM 600 WBOB. Today's show is brought to you by Frontline Insurance. Visit frontlineinsurance.com and get a homeowner's quote today. The Still Just Fishing Show is a live call-in show, so give us a ring at 904-222-8255. That's 904-222-8255. And now, here's your host, the Wizard of the Waterways, Captain Vic Tyson.
And we're back. I got one more segment here. So, but anyway, I lost my train of thought. What was we talking about?
Fishing, probably.
We started talking about skin cancer and sunblock and stuff like that. So,
yeah, it turned into a horror show, actually.
Yeah. You really need to take care of yourself. You know, make sure, you know, that's why I wear long pants, long sleeve shirts. even though it's been 96 degrees outside, you know, no wind a lot of times. But, you know, I try not to. You know, my legs haven't seen the sun in years. They're not white. They're bright, as my kids say. They're bright. They're not white.
Yeah, I wear long pants, long sleeves. Yeah. I wear gloves. Mm-hmm. I wear one of those neck scarves. I wear a hat that makes me look silly.
And the dermatologists tell me it's not what I'm doing now for a living. It's what I did 40 years ago,
but
50 years ago.
They also tell you to stay out of the sun, don't they?
Yes, they do. So. Well, see, back then, I mean, when I fished, when me and my dad fished, you know, I'd go out, take my shirt off, wear a pair of cut-off jeans, you know. We'd be fishing out during the summertime, and it was hot. I was dark tan. You know, we didn't use sunblock or nothing like that. You know? Matter of fact, the people that went to the beach used tanning oil to absorb the sun.
Or baby oil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just cook out there, you know, a little more. And, you know, but you really need to watch that sun. It's bad. And, you know, people are talking about how much how much worse the sun is now, but you know, back then, I think it was worse back then because we did not even use sunblock. Now I've been cut on quite a few times now, so that's why, you know, and a lot of stuff frozen off my hands and stuff like that. And the ones that get me is when they freeze the stuff on your ears. That's what hurts.
Mm. Yeah, I've been frozen.
Yeah. Morning, Taylor.
Man, I didn't think I'd ever get one.
Hey, Taylor.
Really?
Yeah, I think I might get the last of the show, though.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
No, we got more than 30 seconds.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I was thinking about you. I was going to go down fishing on the beach here. Actually, yesterday.
No one fishing.
You what?
There's too many people there. There's no. They already got all the fish.
Oh, really? It's got crowded up, has it?
Yeah, it's too crowded.
I was there a couple weeks ago, I guess, and there was only a few people. I think there's like four guys. One time I was there by being one other guy, and then the next time I went, there was four guys. So you're right. There's probably 45 guys there now.
Yeah, that's my local spot.
Mm.
So yeah, I was calling in. I was thinking, what your opinion on the offshore boats? Because like, seems like we can't catch no snapper. Is it worth buying an offshore boat to go out and catch little small sea bass?
Well, it's not only sea bass. They go out and catch triggerfish.
Yeah, I know, but you got to think, though, this one I'm thinking logically. Okay, when they over the snapper season open up, you can go about 15, 20 miles, sometimes 10 if you're lucky,
yeah,
and get those snappers. But if you're going to get triggerfish, you got to go 30 or 40 miles to get it. You know? So really, the only thing in 20 miles is just like little sea bass and grunts, and the groupers, you're hard to get because of the snapper.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, you know, a lot of people, you know, have an offshore boat, of course. They go after cobia on offshore reefs, they, you know, king mackerel. They, you know, you don't only catch king mackerel on the beach. You know, you catch them, you know, way off the beach, or catch them out there just working around reefs and things like that. Then you can also go out further out and catch dolphin and wahoo and, you know, tuna. It's worth it for the people. Yes, it's worth it for the people who own offshore boats. Now, you're talking about, you know, only going, you know, up to 10, 12 miles off. You don't really need a huge offshore boat for that. You can do that in, like, a 24-foot center console or whatever.
Yeah, like my buddy Q's. He goes on a calm day, go out there.
Yeah.
And so I remember when we were going diving, and I was going every weekend, and we go, like, 20 miles. We wouldn't go 30 because the gas would be really expensive, even the four-stroke. Because you go so many miles and it takes so long to get back. But there just wasn't really much fish out there to catch unless you went out in that deep water. But you're 30 miles offshore. It's pretty far. And you got to time the weather right, because I don't want to be 30 miles offshore and a thunderstorm come in and you can't get back.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I've been out there 15 miles or so and had that happen, and then have to come back through 7-8 foot waves to get back in. And it's not fun. It takes forever to do it. And it, you know. It's not like you can fly back in at 40 miles an hour or whatever, you know, so, when the conditions are like that. But, you know, whenever I had my bigger boat, before I bought my Carolina skiff that I had and started chartering, you know, I used to fish offshore, and then I had a little stump knocker I fished inshore with. And, you know, I'd fish the jetties and the offshore reefs and stuff, but I wouldn't go that far out because, you know, once you go out so far like that, to me, I mean, and the limits were a whole lot better back then, you know, I mean, they didn't have limits and stuff, you know, so they didn't start the snapper limit until 1991. So
oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and when always got me, because when they started the snapper limit, that actually worked. From that point on, you know, the last couple of years that snapper season was actually open here, not just the weekends, but snapper season, that was the best fishing they had since the 70s.
I mean, I don't know why they don't bring it back for the economy and the boaters and the dealerships. It just makes things like
people
don't want to buy the boats. They can't go fishing.
I'll tell you why they don't bring it back is you have organizations like the Wildlife Defense Fund and PETA and them. They will get people to stick together and, you know, sign petitions and get like 3 or 4 million people to sign petitions and get something shut down so that they've got a big voice. Squeaky wheel always gets the grease. When you have fishermen here, you have people at the bait shops and the boat ramps gripe about it, but they're not going to go to Congress and try to get it passed. So you don't have fishermen stick together. You just don't.
When I post stuff about the pier and all that stuff, they're like, oh, you got too much stuff to do, but I care about the community. Like, underneath the pier, there's all that trash there, and I'm thinking, why would you lock all that trash up? So they built a little fence around it to keep the homeless out, and somehow when they did it, they didn't clean up the trash, so it's been in there for months. So I send the city emails, like 3 or 4 emails, and you know, they're like, oh, we don't have the key. I'm like, just cut the lock and get it out. What is such a big deal about it?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we have to just get the key. So I went yesterday, and I guess apparently they boarded the whole thing up, so you can't even throw trash. You can't get in there anyways. But if I didn't call, it would have been there for months.
Yeah.
Anymore, you know?
Good work.
But, and like sometimes I say, it's just
call and harass them.
Yeah, it's just, you know, if fishermen would stick together. I mean, you know, think of how many, you know, tens of thousands of people that fish here in Jacksonville, just in Jacksonville. And
I know.
Think about what kind of an army that we could have like that. You know, if people were to stick together and go to Congress and go, look, you know, fix this thing now, you know. These snapper are eating all kind of fried little fish off the reefs, you know.
Yeah, but if we just schedule like one event, you know, just, hey, everybody come to Mayport boat ramp, but don't put your boats in. Just clog the boat ramp up and the police would come and everybody would come and the news would come. They're like, what are you doing? And we're like, well, we want our rights back. That gets on national news and we didn't even have to call Congress. You got 400 boats showing up Mayport boat ramp. They'll get the attention, you know, at Congress.
Well, when I was chairman of the Recreational Fishing Alliance and I was telling people, I think the biggest thing you would get, the most notoriety you would get is you get about 150 boats hooked to the trucks, go downtown about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and start driving around at about 10 miles an hour downtown so that when 5 o'clock traffic happened, it would be dead stop.
That's like the farmers took their tractors to Washington,
exactly,
D.C. and clogged up and they got stuff done.
Exactly.
Oh, well, I guess we're not farmers. I'll talk to y'all later.
See you, Taylor.
Thanks, Taylor. You've got to stick together, and you've got to get them to notice you. That's the biggest thing, you know. Appreciate you coming in, Bill.
Great it's show. Always fun.
I appreciate it a lot. And, you know, stay tuned next week. Be back same time, same channel.